Thank you for downloading this New Zealand Sports Radio show. We have a new way that you can support us. There is a link in the notes down below where you can make a one-off donation to New Zealand Sports Radio. Thank you for support and enjoy the show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Super Rugby, round 7 of Aotearoa and round 4, I think it is, of Super Rugby AU or Gold, as we like to say here on New Zealand Sports Radio. Hi, I'm Paul and I'll be your host this evening as we review the games that we had at the weekend, the Waratahs versus the Rebels, the Crusaders versus the Hurricanes, the Force versus the Brumbies and the Blues versus the Chiefs that finished just a couple of hours ago. Joining me to go through all of that, I've got Ashwin, who was in the West Stand for that game a couple of hours ago, weren't you, sir?
Yes, I was. I was there until the last sort of, until the yellow card. But we'll get into that later.
Oh, dear. And a man who doesn't leave early is Cornflake. How are you doing, sir?
No, I would have stayed until the bitter end, hoping that the Chiefs could have pulled out, you know, a famous victory. But more on that later.
coming in at not really arriving at the last minute, because the last minute's already been and gone. A man who's got some catching up to do. How you doing, John? Oh, he's gone. For those of you on the podcast, he's gone silent with the hand signals. So it's going to be great podcasting here. From
the band is all back together, gentlemen, you know. Linked arm in arm like Thelma and Louise, plunging over the abyss of sportscasting standards. And let's tally-ho.
Let's tally-ho. As we can see out the window there, it's dark, but John's got his sunglasses on. Shows you which era he's from, back in the old 80s.
My future's so bright, gentlemen. If you hear a funny noise in the background, I am making coffee because I know it's on stage. You're going to ask me to discuss Australian rugby, and I'm going to need caffeine.
Well, let's kick off with that then, John. So what did you think of Friday night, Waratahs versus Rebels?
Gosh. You know, what really does them no service is when they come on straight after the New Zealand rugby games, you know, and it's going to sound condescending to our Australian things, but remember, my first love is the Springboks, so this is speaking purely from a rugby quality perspective, and, you know, watching that, Brumbies versus the Force, just the difference when the ball went down the back line, the passes were behind the player and above the player, which, by the way, cost the Chiefs the win this afternoon, is that their final pass was up here. Down the back line players, you know, in the New Zealand games are running onto the ball. There's just a fluidity that just goes out the window whenever you watch Australian games.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, because John's just gone through straight to the end of the week. I mean, he didn't even touch on the game I asked him about. He's summed everything up. It's all done now. So join us next week.
I need to go to sleep early.
That's why you're getting in, gentlemen. We've gone over the cliff. We've taken our red, convertible over the cliff. Why waste time?
Why waste time, exactly. So, Steve, The in that first game, the apparently the Waratahs were favourites going to that game with the bookies, but I didn't see it that way. Pretty much everyone, all the prediction shows that we were on, everyone was going for the Rebels. So why do you think everyone was so behind the Waratahs coming into this game?
Your guess is as good as mine, and I can consider myself on that as well. The Waratahs, I mean, I think what a case of what it was is last weekend. The Waratahs actually played fairly well against the Brumbies, as far as Australian standards could go. That was a pretty decent game. I mean, Australia played pretty decent two games last weekend. I think looking onto that, I can understand why they would be favourites, because I kind of agreed with that going into that matchup. Although if the Waratahs did play like that again, they could potentially beat the Rebels, because both these two sides are so inconsistent. As we've seen, I mean, look at last week compared to this week. The problem with the Waratahs is they just didn't learn. They just the same things over and over. Oh, how many times did they get pinged for offside throughout that whole game? It was consistently the same penalties every single 5 minutes or even less. And they just didn't have the ability to, you know, to redirect themselves and sort it out. And the same players, Hooper was getting frustrated, and he was just getting stupid things hit against him. And they just couldn't deal with it. And that was the worst game. The Waratahs, you know, I've talked a lot about in the last few weeks about how teams, you know, like we talk about the Brumbies, you know, they're good is good and they're bad is still not so bad. The Crusaders are the same sort of thing. But the Waratahs, when they're good, they can be okay. When they're terrible, they're below the floor. They're just gone completely off the radar. They can be that bad. And for international quality players to not have that ability to adapt on their feet and to change up and really get, you know, change the game plan for their team and to lead their team around the park is a problem for Australian rugby, and it's a massive problem for the Waratahs. They were just not even at the races. I mean, rugby, Super Rugby AU for me is not who plays better. It's the team that doesn't play as bad as the other, because this weekend they were both terrible. All four were terrible, and yet the Brumbies were okay, and the Rebels, well, they just didn't get offside as much.
That's a good summary. Good looking, Steve.
This is why Steve still stays and lives in the South Island, away from John in the North Island. The old penalty count, though, you're right. You're right. 17 penalties in that game, and it's been a theme throughout the Super Rugby AU since it's come back. The Waratahs just have been giving up penalties over and over again. They've just not learnt from game to game or within a game either. The Rebels, 9 penalties, which is kind of average. It's not that's not a low score, but it's a decent one. For me, the Waratahs stayed in this for the first 20 minutes, despite having no kind of territory or possession. The Rebels, I mean, they dominated this game. They spent 75% of the game in the Waratahs' half, but it still took a yellow card to Hooper for them to pull away. In that sort of the 10 minutes before halftime, where it went from 10-9 out to 10-19. And Arshwin, you were saying that you actually you've crossed your arms, which means you're really not you've gone, Paul, don't talk to me about Australian rugby.
Yeah. I'm all closed off, you know, body language signals and everything. It's just like, we talked about prior to the show, it's just like, watch some rugby gold this weekend, and nearly 160 minutes, about 150 minutes of it, and I said to the guys before the show, I struggle to remember what the hell happened in the game. It's just like, you know, it's just such a, to me, I think that they made a mistake in going to those alternate laws as well. What's actually worked, I mean, like jumping ahead, doing a John O'Connor, is the fact that the rules in New Zealand Super Rugby competition are actually working. And all that is actually playing the rule book, right? So that's all that had to happen in Australian rugby, and you'd probably have a better game. You know, I know people are getting orgasmic about the 50-22 and the 22-50 and all that sort of stuff, but to tell you the truth, the games as a spectacle isn't great, and you're struggling to stay awake for us at that time of the evening. What they need to do is basically go with the rule book that, or the laws, and play the laws of the game, and have those players rolling out of the rucks so that you're getting fast ball, and now all of a sudden the intensity of the game's gone up. The intensity is seriously lacking from the Australian rugby games.
Yeah, and a couple of players which we'll pull out of this one. I mean, you did in the conflict. You talked about Hooper there. Yeah, he gave up 5 penalties in that game. You kind of complain and say, "Oh, a player's had a bad game when they give up 3 penalties." 5 is a massive number. I've never seen anyone have that many in a game before. Very occasionally, a prop who is getting absolutely dominated might give
in
up
in a scrum situation.
Which isn't really entirely their fault. I mean, that's the whole scrum's fault, really, there at that point. But for one player who's a flanker to give away 5 penalties is just a joke.
But it's just killing the game, isn't it? That's all it's doing. It's killing the game. As a spectacle, it's like, what are you watching? You're not watching, you're falling asleep on the couch, thinking I should be in bed, pulling the cover duvet over me.
But I mean, people have been complaining about Angus Gardner's refereeing and the fact that he has been whistled, or Cardner, as Cornflake has nicknamed him. But he's the guy that when there was that poll of New Zealand Super Rugby players, and they were told to vote who is the best Super Rugby referee, Angus Gardner came out as being got the most votes. So I don't think it's really I don't think it's really Angus Gardner's fault. It's the players' fault for not adapting to it, really.
I'm just thankful he's in Australia. He can stay there and referee their competitions instead. I mean, there was those yellow cards in there. That was his input. He does whistle a lot. I mean, he can interrupt the flow of games if he gets his little backup on his whistles. But I mean, yeah, they were breaking the law so many times. Like you talk about, the penalty count was just horrendous, and they missed 30 tackles as well. If the stats that I got from the end of that game are correct as well, so. Yeah, it's defensively they're poor. The Waratahs are frustrated. They're only in that game because they got the intercept try to Alex Newsom. He kept them in it. Apart from that, they would have never even been close against the run of play. They didn't construct themselves a try or anything like that. So, it was just frustration.
Seriously, when Steve just mentioned the intercept try, it's like, oh, wow, I remember the game now. That's right. They only scored one try, and they never looked like scoring one. And it was an intercept. Other than that, they never actually looked like scoring a try.
I went to work. I made coffee. I got some biscuits. I came back and sat down. And more happened than in that game. when I came back, you were like in the same place.
I think Steve makes a good point. We should move on.
there is one player I want to pull out. I do want to highlight.
Highlight one player.
Hardwick for the Rebels. He made 11 tackles, only missed one. Now, he's made 11 tackles in a side that only had to make 59 tackles.
Very good.
That is an impressive feat there to actually make that many tackles. The Waratahs made 176 tackles, and as good-looking Steve says, they missed 36 on top of that. So, the fact that the Tars were within 19 points of the Rebels, it just shows you that the Rebels weren't. And yeah, as you say, let's move on to a real game.
I just wanted to say that works up to 11:59.
Maths is clearly John's strong suit.
He's not even Asian.
Dearie me. So the second game of the game, weekend on Saturday evening, the Crusaders versus the Hurricanes. A couple of stats here for you folks. Crusaders ran the ball for 592 metres to only 292 by the Hurricanes. Had 56 and 55% of the possession in the territory. With those kind of stats, you'd normally they made 16 clean breaks to only 9 by the Hurricanes. Beat 41 defenders, or the Hurricanes missed 41 tackles. The Crusaders only missed 19. The Crusaders offloaded 16 times to only 1 by the Hurricanes. Hey, this clearly, with those stats, had to be a convincing Crusaders win. Oh, really? I'm not sure what happened.
But the thing is that that entire time, or not entire time, actually, it's probably that time after halftime excluded, the Canes had the Crusaders under pressure all the time, even though they're maintaining the ball. They've got their ball. They keep the Crusaders under pressure. And when you look at the teams that have been to Christchurch, the Highlanders and the Blues, they actually pressured them for 60 minutes of the game and then lost it in the last 20. And what it shows is that you can beat the Crusaders down there, but it's got to be an 80-minute effort, not a 60-minute effort, because the fact is that they will hold the ball. They will be constructive. But if you can be in their grill for 80 minutes of the game, you have a chance to win that game. But if you only do it for 60, then you won't.
And I think it also helps that they were in the lead from 34 minutes, right? They never felt behind, so they kept their neck in front, which I think is also a big one when you're playing the Crusaders down in Christchurch. If you fall behind, you suddenly fall behind by two scores very quickly, don't you? But they kept responding whenever the Crusaders did, and they kept chipping away. And that grill thing, Steve, I mean that or John, whoever takes one up, the Crusaders actually kicking sticks, not going for the corner. Respect, eh?
Well, I think
this is where you guys talk.
Cornflake.
I thought you're winding up to something quite impressive there. I thought you were going to go saying good. Okay, that's saying something. Yes. It is, isn't it? But I mean, the biggest thing I found about this game was the fact, I've even gone all special and big, haven't I? The fact is that the Hurricanes could, they defended well. No one else needs to be on the show.
That's the quote of the year. Steve said, I've gone all special and big.
Yeah, that's what they all say. That's the quote of the year. Watch out on the weekends. That's what happens when you focus things. What I was trying to say there before we have a laughing fit here, they defended well. Now, when the Crusaders stepped up near the end there and they actually increased the speed of the game, the pace of the game, and they went up that next sort of gear, they defended, they held them out. And so they didn't get that that big confidence boost, and get that big crowd boosts and all that sort of stuff they normally do get when they kind of lift up that gear. They went there to that place. They went to those ideas. They went to those tactics, but it just didn't come off like it normally did in previous weeks. I think that was a big telling place of this whole match, because the game was going like a normal Crusaders game. They were there or thereabouts. They were within a few points. They were within a score. They were ready to attack. They got to that area of the game that they wanted to lift the game, lift the tempo, lift their consecutive plays and phase play and keep things at a high pace and disjoint the Hurricanes' defense. But they held it out and they kept themselves in their lead effectively right through to the very end. Just about, I mean, we just about would have had that golden point, which would have been really exciting. But they did just enough, didn't they, to hold them out right to the very, very end, which, I mean, that I think is a turning point. The Crusaders are happy to play 60 minutes within a try of their opposition. If they're trailing by less than 10, they're fine with that, because they know that they've got that next gear in that last 15 minutes or so that they can go to. This week, that next gear didn't come to enough for them, and that was the big turning point of this match.
That 2 points that Moanga missed was actually the I think quite a crucial miss, in the sense that, not the fact that it would drawn the game up, but you could imagine it would be a classic Crusaders finish to that game. He gets the 2 points, it's drawn up, and with basically less than a minute left on the clock, they'll run the length of the field and score a try, because that's what the Crusaders do. But I felt that by missing that kick, that the Canes were able to keep their heads up, because I felt that their heads would have dropped if it had been drawn up with no time, basically bugger all time left on the clock. And they would have come back and scored a try in the corner to win the game. That's what happens. It's happened so many times down there. And so that's why it was a crucial miss in terms of Moanga from the sideline.
And they pretty much did too, go length of the field, even though he missed that. Will Jordan almost just carved them up right at the end and went in himself. So it's just Crusaders' lives. It's what they do, and they almost still did it regardless.
And the difference was the fact that the Canes were basically, their heads were still in the game. They hadn't dropped their heads. Because, again, I think, because that, hey, look, we're still in the lead, fellas. Oh, my God. we've got less than a minute to go. We can do this. Whereas you get that conversion, it's tied up, and this is like the heads drop, don't they? And it's just like that effort probably would have been completed.
You see that the players on the sideline too, Dupsi, Karifi, and Umanga Jensen it was on the sideline, giving it large to the crowd, giving it large to the players as well on the sideline, throwing hands and fists all over the place. You're right, that would have been gone. If that was tied up, they would have been sitting on the bench.
I mean, that's like old Quentin Strange throwing hands all over the place, wasn't it, with the last play of the game?
I think that there was definitely a change at halftime, though. In the first half, both teams happy to kick and really wanted to play in each other's territory. Whereas come out the second half and the Crusaders suddenly started saying, right, we need to have possession, right? We're going to play out. We're going to keep hold of the ball. We're actually going to play out of our own half, and we're going to try and starve the Hurricanes of possession. That's how we're going to grind them down. They failed to do that. Stephen Harris, good point that some players like Amaya Jensen maturing into the role, stepped up, had a big game, and even that first half, though, it took a miracle try for the Crusaders to get over the line, didn't it? I mean, that was a fantastic one, a little 1-2 with Sever Reese to make the break. He then flings a real wide pass. That hits grass, but on the half volley, a little hack forward by Bridge, who then runs through and puts it down. Not the cleanest of plays, but one. But for me, try of the year. I love that.
Oh my God! Are you a Sky Sport commentator, Paul? Oh, seriously, man, it's a jammy try. It was a great, great jammy try, right? And this is like, the way the commentators were going on about it. It's just like he got jammy, he hacked it ahead, and it got a nice little sort of in swing coming in towards leg stump, and it sort of like went away from Geordie, who was coming across. Yeah. It's sort of funny because, like, the initial camera angle, it looks like Geordie Barrett being really lazy and not turning and quickly pouncing on the ball. But from the end on, you can see it's actually quite a distance away from him.
You know, he had it covered for all money, and it basically took a giant leg break to the left. So he's covering it here in front of him. And next
off break.
No, leg break, because he's running this.
Leg break goes the other way. It's a leg spinner.
Was a challenge.
So, folks, on Thursday evening, we'll have in-depth analysis of the difference between a leg break and an off break on the hip hop cricket show.
The point being that rugby, what really deserves great credit is that there was skill in getting that kick in, keeping it in, but then he chased his kick. And the kick, it's an old adage, but the kick is only as good as its chase. Kept chasing, and that's how he got the try. He got a lucky bounce, then bounced away from Jordan Barrett, but he chased.
I think that's what makes George Bridge the front runner for an All Blacks jersey for that wing, is the fact that it's his work rate. You know, it's like go hard. You don't, I've hacked it ahead and I'll just sort of chase it and keep a line and that. No, you're doing everything at a 110%. I've done air quotes for people listening on the podcast thingy. I've done air quotes. So it's like, you know, everything's done at 110%. It's nothing's just done in half measures.
All these old people who don't know technology I've got to deal with. Jeez, it's hard work, folks. It really is hard work.
I'm going to say something that's very controversial here. I don't think that the Crusaders have the most talented rugby players in this tournament. They are the most extraordinary organization. And as much as it burns me to say it, they possibly are the greatest rugby organization on the planet, because what they do is they maximize talent. I think that some of the players were found out from the Crusaders when they came up against England, athletically, because Sever Reese, for instance, was found out. But he's very much a sort of throwback wing in his size and his ability. But when they play for the Crusaders, everything is maximized. And I think there are other more talented wings, so if you put them in that Crusaders team, would be even better. I think some of the more talented players are in other teams in New Zealand.
Yep. John, you're a little bit faint, so in future, can you try speaking up a little bit?
Look, I mean, the reality is that that's what we've been saying for a long time. It's the way that their management coaching group can extract the talent that they have from the players that they have. But I mean, you go back over the time, and you know, you look at the players that the Crusaders have got into the All Blacks. Your Reuben Thorns, your Blackadders. I mean, they're by no means anything great, but basically their work rate is definitely high. And they basically, as I say, you know, the old cliche of 110%. It's just like the game's not lost and they give all their heart. But in terms of skills, geez, no. I mean, Caleb Ralph, I'm a god.
Oh, you stole it. I was about to say, do I need to start with the Caleb Ralph and Kevin Senio train again? Oh, the worst All Blacks ever made, based on the fact that they're on the end of a Crusaders back line and the start of one. Terrible, absolutely terrible. I couldn't agree with that anymore. So many terrible All Blacks have been framed because of a great club.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, big ups to them too. Because you can't.
They're not a club, they're a franchise. We do not want the Twitterati exploding over this now that we've used the word club for one of these, for a Super Rugby franchise.
Can we maybe
throw the money.
Some of the All Blacks that are starting to rise to the surface, especially the new ones. Because I know you're desperate to talk about Australian rugby, Paul, and I admire your ability to soldier on like Sisyphus, you know, pushing that ball up the hill only to have it roll down every time. But maybe we can talk about some of these new All Blacks, or potentially new All Blacks, like Duplessis Kerefi, who I think is just got All Black written all over him.
I think he's actually playing a lot better in the Aotearoa part of the season, rather than the beginning of the season. He was a lot of work at the breakdown, right on the edge, but I think his carrying has come on a lot in the last couple of games, and he's got much more involved on the attack, not just in the breakdown. Well,
he's a baby. I mean, he's learning that craft and that level, and there's just so much ability there. Only problem is that he is the current incumbent coach's captain. He's up against him for the starting position, but there is so much ability in that youngster.
The Hurricanes did another guy who is Tyrrell Lomax, another guy who's I think will be in the All Blacks. I think the Hurricanes really missed having him early on in this one. The disruption they had to their side through late injuries. Liam Mitchell had to come in on the bench. I think Walker Lurie and Fifita both missed out, but were initially named. So. The Hurricanes did this off the back of losing three players in the run-up to the game as well. So they did play very well down there. But
they did. Jordan is right. They played extremely well to win down there. But there's another All Black name that you can put in the bag, and that is on a coaching level. How can I forget his name? The former All Black right wing 2011 World Cup winner. He is the defense coach for the Hurricanes. Corey Jane, thank you. Corey Jane, who is running the defense for the Hurricanes. He has done a tremendous job in turning the defense around. And I think there's signs of great ability there as a coach. And I would have thought it was always such a comedy act, but he
looks at that really good. And I mean, Ben Lamb, a winger, made 14 tackles in this game. I mean, that's nuts for a winger. Compare that to Severi Reese, only had to make 3 tackles. And he made them all, by the way. Severi Reese didn't miss any. Ben Lamb with 14 tackles, Wes Hoosen with 10 on the other wing. Both those guys put in a shift of work that they wouldn't normally be expected to do and to keep it going was impressive.
And that's what you have to do, right? I mean, that comes back to what we talked about, is the fact is that they're just getting up in their grill and knocking them over and not letting them get any momentum. I mean, hands up, I'm sure, you know, there's four people with hands up. Is it when Launi Mamapi went off the field? Yep, put your hands up, people. Before, it's just like, you know, it's like, yep, here we go. And it was about with 20 minutes still left in the game, I believe, that you sort of think, oh, okay, the Canes midfield is going to become a bit porous. But no, Arso comes on. And then I think Umanga Jensen goes off as well. So they had a totally rejigged midfield there from the start as well. But no, they still kept it defensively rock tight.
I think if we're going to, you know, pick on Lamape last week and say that someone needs to make fun of him every week so he plays like he did last weekend, I think someone needs to make sure that Ben Lamb signs a week-to-week contract would also be a good idea. So good idea. Every week is his last game for the Hurricanes, so that he could actually – yeah, he played out of his skin. I think that was the best game I've seen from Ben Lamb, because he actually – well, he went looking to try and make something special happen. Normally he's the wing sitter. He very rarely comes out, and he just sits out there and is a big wing bully and tries to run over people and make those busts on the sideline. But he was in there, and he was out there doing it. And you can't go through this game without crediting Wes Hoosen, a guy that's been in and out, really hasn't been that great. His show of speed and ability, acceleration to shoot through a gap, was number one world class in that game. He outpaced guys, you know, All Black wings, Bridge. Just showed them the corner, showed them the shoulder, beat them for the acceleration. He was a massive difference maker, and he's had a really average season for a guy that's his skill. You know, you talk about Milner Scudder's, you know, imagine Milner Scudder without a sidestep. Wes Hoosen's a guy that without the acceleration, he's nothing, and he's really been nothing this season. But we finally seen that good ability that he does have and that he can show and give to the team. And that was, you know, a big, big point that he had. Guys on his outside, he can burn through a gap and lead the way to the try line. So that was great for Wes Hoosen. I think he needed a big performance like that, and they've really lifted.
And big ups for the pronunciation on acceleration as well. Awesome. And he used all that acceleration on that the try that he scored as well. I was just like, you know, because like there was cover defense there, but he basically put the foot down and burned him through the gap. And I honestly thought, what are you doing? Pass to the outside. The open man's on the outside. And it's like he made that try easy, look easy, something that wasn't, because there was three Crusaders defenders around him.
Now, Alex, Canes have good depth in midfield and back three. They do midfield. In back three, it's suddenly going to be stretched because Ben Lamb is off to Bordeaux is on a plane now. Corbis van Wyk is also on a plane to Leicester Tigers. So those two have gone now and are not available for the rest of the season, which means that Wes Hoosen is going to get game time. Let's be blunt. And the only
not Chuck Arso on the wing.
The only other full-time winger they've got is Salisi Raisi, who we've not seen anything of at all. You've got Vince Arso, you've got Chase Tiatia, who can also help out. Jordan Lowe is also there. I'm not sure what his injury situation is.
Gentlemen, there's just two things I'm going to point out. One is that Ben Lamb may go down as one of the great underdogs.
So we can hear you.
Yes. Ben Lamb may go down as one of the great unrealized talents of the last 20 years in New Zealand rugby. I really do believe if he had wound up playing at the Crusaders, he probably be a 30 test plus program. Just had everything that is needed physically to be a world class winger. So that's a real sadness that we never got that crack, just never kicked on. And then the other thing is, I think it's very easy to overlook just how good Nani Lamapi was in this game, because you didn't see him burn somebody on the outside or run straight over people. But the thing was, and this is the difference that he's added in the last 2 years or so to his skill set, is that he was drawing double tackles and he was feeding beautifully on the outside corner. So he was making very good passes because he was drawing a double team, because they were setting up to try and stop him. And as a result, he was creating space on both sides. And so
I think Lamapi played a lot more central, a lot more in the traffic than this game. I think that's what the All Blacks coaches want him to do. That's how they tend to play their centres or their second 5/8. So I think he was playing much more like that. Look, Ben Lamb, I'm going to disagree with you. He is somebody who, I mean, last season was leading try scorer going into the break and then just went missing as soon as the Hurricanes weren't firing. He's a player that can switch off and can be, yeah.
That's why I think the Crusaders would have done that maximized talent thing, which they seem to do. They seem to get the very best. And in him, New Zealand had the quartile sort of a really, really special player. This is not the only one. You can say the same about Cara Bryant, you can say about Joe Blatter, you can say about Ron Cribb, who goes to at least had a few tests, but also I never realized this was a question.
One other player I do want to pick out, actually, from the Crusaders side is Richie Mwanga. Yes, we've already mentioned the fact that he missed that conversion, but I think he again tried to, like the other week, where he did that dribble restart and grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. He tried to grab this game by the scruff of the neck as well. He had the kick, collect, chip, chase, force that 5-meter scrum, which led to a try. He had the show and go, which put Reese into for that final try as well. He did everything he could to drag this Crusaders side over the line and get the win, didn't he?
You sort of feel that. I mean, you will only find this out once Brett Cameron comes on. But the reality is that I think that Crusaders side isn't going to do very well if Moang is not there. He makes a huge difference to that side. He gets them to go forward. When we look at both the last two games that they've been down there, you know, the Blues one and then the Canes one this weekend, it's like it's Moanga that's dragging them back into the game. If he's not there, I have some serious questions about whether they wouldn't actually lose quite easily. And you saw Brett Cameron, you know, it was much celebrated. Oh, he's finally back on the bench for the Crusaders. Never got on the field anyway, because they don't have confidence in the backup to Moanga, do they?
No, why would you? I mean, Moanga has that ability, doesn't he, to turn into that next level? And you've seen it majorly when the Crusaders now start to be tested throughout the game. And when the team needs to step up, he's a guy that steps up first.
Take that next level.
He drags the team forward. He does something special. He creates the space moving forward. He takes it on himself. He beats defenders. I mean, if he played a full 80 minutes like that, would be sitting here going on, he's a player of the year in the globe if he could do that for the full game. But yeah, he really has that ability to just take over and take control. I mean, come on, Paul, if you played that last 15 minutes he played last week and this week, he would be phenomenal. The Crusaders would be winning every game by 60 points.
But I don't think anyone has got the engine to play at that pace.
Oh, exactly. But that's what I mean. He paces himself so well to know when he has to do it. If he doesn't need to do it, he doesn't do it. But when it gets down to the crunch, he has that ability in the locker that he can step up to you know, world class levels, and that's something you can't teach, you can't train. That's just natural ability.
Okay, I'll disagree with you, Paul, on that one, and the fact that a back not having the gas in the tank to play like that for a full 80, it's a back. He's not a forward. He's not throwing himself at every ruck. Aaron Smith does it pretty much constantly. I never understand why the coaches pull him, because things do change quite a bit when he leaves the field. And I mean, he can do it, and he's probably in a more intensive position at halfback than Moanga would be at first five.
It's quite easy just to shovel the ball on, isn't it? Give yourself 5 minutes break. You know, just shovel it out to your inside centre, let those guys do some work, you know, take a bit of a breather, yeah.
Because even when he's on fire, like he is for that last 15, he's still not running the ball at the line every time he gets it in hand. He's still passing it out. He's picking his time when he runs the ball at the line, and he picks it well. That's the difference.
Well, we'll agree to disagree on that one.
I'm trying to see is this better? Does this sound better?
No.
Not much, John. No, doesn't.
No, not at all. You go out and spend on tech.
Just shout. Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's way better than, way better.
There's something wrong with this. Anyway, what I was going to say is that I've had some serious misgivings about Moana before England knocked the Blacks out last year, and all the way through up until last week and this week. There were two things that stood out for me. One was last week, where he, as you said, in the last few minutes, took the game by the scruff of the neck and really turned it around, starting with that inventive kickoff, the dribble kickoff and weak leg. And by the way, I think it says a lot about how Razor Robertson coaches that team, that he's given him the liberty to be creative. You know, he's given a young first five the freedom to make those kind of decisions and to be a playmaker. And the second thing, and this is the really interesting part, is I've always had this concern about Moana, and it was shown against England, in that all of his performances in the last sort of 3-4 years for the Crusaders have been behind a winning pack. So he's always getting the ball on the front foot. He's always coming onto good ball. And what would he do? Would he be able to control the game when his forwards were being held or when they were maybe on the back foot? And in, funny enough, even though they lost this game, what I saw was the first signs for me of Moana being able to control the game when his forwards weren't always in control. And there were certain times where the Hurricanes had, at various stages, had the Crusaders packed under pressure. And there were certain times, because of his athleticism, that Adi Savia was coming off the back and was running at him. And he was driving the Hurricanes back. And when the ball was turned over, he was able to turn it around and convert pressure and move them down the field. And it's the first time that I've looked and I thought, yeah, I can see something here. I can see that shift into the next level, that if the All Blacks come up against a pack that is putting them under pressure, that he can convert pressure inside his own half and control the game and get his team out of there, even if the ball is not on the top foot.
I think he has really stepped up. He's shown that this season and is making a good case of being that first choice All Blacks number 10, not just the replacement because David McKenzie isn't there and Bowden Barrett has to move to 15. Now we're going to go through this next game very quickly because there really isn't much time left. Well, there isn't much time left either. Force Brumbies. Brumbies, two quick tries early in the game. One off a set move off a scrum. The other one was a turnover score. Defended for the rest of it. The Force couldn't break them down. A couple of scores in the second half. Defended lots more. The Force just couldn't break them down. Finished 0-24. Well done, Brumbies. You're rolling on. And the Force, yeah, lots of effort. Lots of trying. But absolutely zero reward for that. And look, at least they should have kicked a penalty when they had the opportunity rather than just going for the corner all the time, even when there was over an hour left of play. Anything I've missed there, boys, or have I managed to sum up the whole game?
Summed up the whole game. Basically, the scoreline doesn't indicate how even the contest was. That's about it. But the Force just couldn't score.
Yep.
Brumbies look good for 10 minutes. Tom Wright is fantastic if he gets space. And maybe Australia have another good fire half in Bailey Kunzel, maybe?
Is he the guy that looks like George Gregan?
No, he's the guy that looks like he's a mountain. He's tall. He's like Geordie Barrett, fire half.
All right.
Yeah, plays at 10. 22 turnovers by the Force.
The Force, 0.
But 0-24 for the actual score. So they gave up more points than the turnovers, which is perhaps a good sign. You should do that, but it shouldn't be that close. Super Rugby Aotearoa has definitely been delivering. Thank you, Alex, for your super chat there. For those of you on YouTube, you can give us super chat or super stickers to help support this independent sports station. And he's quite right. Every single game in the Super Rugby Aotearoa has been by really small margins, and the games have been going right to the end. Even when it has blown out, it's only blown out in the last 5 or 10 minutes. With think of like the first Hurricanes Crusaders game, for example, but all the others have been close. That was so close with like 60 minutes to go.
How can every game be by small margins, but when it was blown out, it was only in the last 2 minutes?
Enough. This is the details.
Don't mock my Highlanders.
Blues Chiefs.
Point of difference here, gentlemen. I actually have felt, up until this weekend, disappointed with a lot of the rugby that has happened in Super Rugby Aotearoa. And I have felt that we have had a praise-singing thing coming at us from the Sky Sports commentators. And this weekend is one of the, I don't want to say only weekends, because there's been 7 of them now, but most weekends, both games were not great games. Last weekend, the second game was a exciting game because the Chiefs managed to butcher it. But in the first game, there were 4 more tries from lineouts, 2 on each side of the tries that were scored. In the second game, there were either 3 mauling tries from lineouts, or there were 4 as well. So huge proportions of the game. It's like watching Northern Transvaal or the Blue Bulls play last weekend. And with some standout performers like Nani Lamape aside, a lot of times I've been disappointed with the rugby. Even the very skillful rugby that teams like, say, the Chiefs might have played might have been pointless, and that they're not a lot of skillful offloads and passes and beautiful patterns, but no penetration. So there were times up until this last weekend where I thought a lot of the rugby was being lauded by the scouts. Whoa, it's so fantastic. It's great to watch rugby after not having been in sport for months and months. But it hasn't been that great that we should all go, oh, this is incredible games, right? Some of these games have been tight simply. see that good looking Steve. Some of the games, and I do have a very soft spot for the Landers, but some of these games have only been tight because the Chiefs have somehow managed to butcher it. I mean, all of these games that the Chiefs have managed to lose at the death have been through not controlling the game properly.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Look, we're not going to have champagne rugby every single game, but they have been tight. They have been close, which makes them exciting, even if it hasn't been the best quality of rugby the whole time. I mean, for example, lineouts really have been a mess in Super Rugby Aotearoa, for example, and haven't been working.
What were you
I was just going to say, basically the key thing is it's the intensity. The intensity is up there. That's what makes a game exciting, is the intensity. It's not necessarily the skills. It's not necessarily the offloads. When you look at opposition sporting codes, it's not necessarily the fact that they're got these fantastic offloads that are happening. It's the fact that the intensity of the sporting occasion is up there, and that's what you've got in every single game. Is that the hits are big, the impacts, the tackles, some of the tackles that are going in this competition at the moment, they're fantastic. They're massive. It's Offa today again, smashing a little halfback again. And it's just like, you know, that's the thing. So it's not about the fact that you can do a offload out the back of the hand while you're getting tackled by 3 guys. It's about the fact that there's the intensity in the game and the big hits and that sort of thing as well. So
that's what disappointed me, is sometimes I was watching games and the Crusaders would have an intensity here and the team that they were playing against would seem to be there. And what happened this week is very much the Hurricanes matched them for that level.
That's where Paul was talking about the fact that they blow out in the last, say, last 10, 15, 20 minutes. And that's the fact is that even with the games that the only games that are blown out have involved the Crusaders, and they've been in their last 20 minutes. Up until then, it has been basically the opposition bringing it, and they haven't brought it for the 80, and that's what the Canes did this weekend.
And that's how the Crusaders play their game, isn't it? They grind their teams down over an hour or 50, 60 minutes. They play a slow game. They control the game. They control the way the pace it's played at. And then when they, like we talk about Moaga, when it's time to go, they go. And we've seen that the Blues, that was a perfect example. That game was nice and close and tight. It was even. It was like, oh, could the Blues do it? Then no, shut them out. And I mean, the difference is, like I say, the Hurricanes held it out. They actually stood up to that. The Blues couldn't. The Highlanders couldn't.
But the thing was that when you look at it, actually the Blues were the ones that actually gave them that opportunity because they dropped that intensity. It's almost like they scored. Mm-hmm. Rico scores the try. And they thought, aha, we're in here, my boys. And they dropped their intensity. And you gotta keep that intensity up. And it's just like there's where Moanga kicked that ball, the quick kickoff, that is every day of the week. And as Steve Harris would say, twice on Sundays, you have a man position there. So they dropped the ball because they weren't focused enough to basically have the man positioned in the right position for that kickoff. And Moanga picked that up and pounced on it.
And following up on what you say, look, carry on.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, these very, very high-level matches where they won at the highest level, and it's the one that comes to mind because it's very recent, but the World Cup final,
typical.
But the point being is that there was no let-off from the box. They just relentlessly came at the English.
Yeah, John, back the truck up here. England had played their final the week before. If you can't admit to that, you know, that's what happened. England had basically got given everything and emptied the tank the week before. And we've always talked about the World Cup is the fact is that you've got to keep bringing it. And that's it. They played their game. They played their final the week before. That was over. They were never going to win that final. They were never going to win that final.
It's a bit different getting up for a Rugby World Cup final than round six of Super Rugby.
Super Rugby, absolutely.
Right. So we're coming back to Super Rugby. I've just gone back through all the scores. Apart from the Blues beating the Hurricanes by 10, the Crusaders are the only team that have managed to win a game by more than a score in all these games. They've all been tight. They've all been exciting. And the intensity has been there. Talking of tight, exciting intensity, I'm just throwing those words out there. In all honesty, let's talk about the Blues, the Chiefs that happened today. I thought Dave McKenzie got himself involved a lot more in this game than he has done recently. Putting himself in, particularly at first receiver. I think he'd been told, look, you need to step up, you need your hands on the ball, and we saw a lot more of Damien this weekend, didn't we?
Yeah, look, I mean, sitting in the West End, basically the only time you felt like the Blues defensive line was under threat is like, Damien's got the ball and he's got time and space with meters to the defensive line, and it's like, where's he going. So that's basically, yeah, definitely agree. And it was also, if we go back when he's been very successful, it was that type of ball that he was getting in terms of time and space, just sort of like about 10, 15 meters away from the defensive line.
And the Chiefs had all the ball in that first half, but their lack of confidence really showed, and they just couldn't finish anything off. The Blues really had two opportunities in that first half, and finished both of them, and suddenly found themselves 14-0 ahead, having hardly touched the ball. Something that Arsh and I used to talk about probably about a year, 2 years ago, was that possession was not a good guide as to who was going to win the game, because it's what you do with it. If you score quickly, you don't need much possession to score points. If you take 20 phases every time you want to score, you need lots of possession.
That conversation was off the back of like Crusaders games, where you go through and look at a Crusaders game and it's like they only had 40% of the possession. It's like, yeah, but that 40% every time they had it, they scored a try. So that was the I remember that conversations that we used to have. But that's one thing that the Blues did today, though. They went back to some old bad habits, and the fact that particularly in the first half is that they made errors or gave away penalties, which meant that they just didn't have the ball. And the Chiefs basically, it felt like for that first half, had the ball for the whole half. Again, off the back of penalties and mistakes by the Blues.
Also, where penalties were given, right? Mm. It was something like 7-3 or 7-2 on the penalty count, or I think 8-3, I think, at halftime. And one of the mentions was that the Highlanders hadn't given up a penalty in their own half. So
jeez.
Whereas the Blues were giving them up in their own half all the time.
I didn't know how the Highlanders gave away a penalty today.
So Hurricanes, Chiefs. Chiefs. Who's
playing? Just go through all the teams, Paul.
There's only five. You'll get it right.
The Chiefs didn't give up any penalties in their own half.
Yeah, I can just see him at the strip club. It's a five. It's a ten. No,
actually, I mean, I have to say, after being, you know, even with the losses with the Crusaders and when we lost to the Canes as well, I wasn't, you know, I thought the refereeing was somebody. I'm sorry, today the refereeing was below standards that have been achieved in Super Rugby Aotearoa. In fact, this weekend hasn't been a good example of the refereeing. Today, continuously in that first half in particular, Chiefs were coming in from the side. And we've sort of we've seen how the game flows so much better when you keep them coming, both sides coming from the back. But the Chiefs were coming from the side continuously and getting away with it. Last the Hurricanes Crusaders game, twice there was a player in front. The team knocks the ball on their own players in front, and they play the ball, and a scrum was awarded. That's a penalty. It's offside play. And it was clear. It wasn't like it was messy and it was hard to see. It was clear. There was quite a few errors that were really obvious, I felt, this weekend, that the referees just let themselves down from the I felt that, you know, from the standards that they've set in previous games.
I'd agree with you. I mean, I think standards from the first few games have fallen off quite considerably around pretty much everything that they cracked down on. Even the offsides that are getting pretty pinged still a lot, it's still not as strict as it was. The rucks, how much time do you need at a ruck now? I mean, I like those first few weeks where it was like, ruck, bang, penalty. Away you go.
Yes.
See ya.
Yes.
It's done. Now it's like, ruck, oh, he's getting held in there. Are they going to clear it? Is it going to come out there? Oh, there it is. You can play it now, halfback. Yep. No, it's like, bang. It's not coming out. Gone.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's what was. And today's game was in that ruck. The ruck area was actually a mess, and it felt like the players were actually getting to the point of frustration. A 9-3 penalty count, I think, as Paul alluded to at halftime, it was absolute BS. And you know, you could see clearly. This is like, oh my God, you've actually making. Oh, I'm sorry. I just got frustrated at the game today with some of the penalty calls that Pickerel was making. He was absolutely woeful today.
You know, we're talking about referee.
Your blue underpants are showing, Alistair.
No, mate. As I said, I didn't have a problem against the Crusaders and Canes. It's just like you get 50-50 calls. That's fine. Today it was not. It was not. It was not a good level. It has let themselves down. That's it.
But the biggest mistake that was made by the ref today was not awarding, at the very least, a penalty on the halfway after
now you're letting your red, black, and yellow undies show, mate. It's just like Caleb Clark was basically, he tripped and he fell on the player.
You're not allowed to tackle a player on the ground.
He didn't tackle him. He fell over and he landed on him. Simple as that.
The point is, mm-hmm. If you take somebody out in the air and you didn't mean to, you still took somebody out in the air. And
but there's rules around that. There's a law around that. There isn't a law around falling over and accidentally play part of the game getting injured.
No, mate. I think if the roles were reversed, you'd be screaming blue murder. Excuse the pun.
Nah.
But that's that's the very reason why that rule is in place. Is because of
around the ear in the ear.
Yeah, no, but the rule that you can't tackle a player on the ground.
But he didn't tackle him, John. He fell over and landed on him.
Watch it again.
I did.
Watch it again.
I did, because we thought, ooh, when we were at the ground, ooh. It's just like, and we asked the question, do you think Caleb Clark's going to be in trouble after the game? We had the discussion there. So it's like, when you look at it, he's actually fallen over. He's clumsy. He's fallen over. But that's, you know, that's part of the game. That happens all the time.
You run and you're clumsy and you take somebody out of the air, you still.
Again, there's rules around, there's laws in the game around
what we're seeing here is the outcome of what happened is leading the discussion rather than what actually happened. The fact that he went off injured. I understand where you're coming from, John. I understand your argument. But I'm saying that the players, especially when you're going for tries, players diving for someone like that, you find people tripping up and landing on people around rucks all the time.
My discussion is I have a son who's playing next weekend. That's what leads my discussion. And if he scores a try and the ball is down and he's over the ball and then he gets hit, not in the act of scoring that somebody's diving to try and prevent it. But he scored, he's over it, and then he's lying on the ground and he gets hit. The function, the number one function of the rules is to protect the players. So I'm not.
Okay, so when your son's playing next week and he gets hit in the ribs with a good shot and he breaks a rib, oh my God, because we want to protect your son, we'll have a law around that.
Sonny Bill Williams got a red card against the Lions. It didn't save the guy he hit. It saved every other player the next weekend all the way around the world.
Didn't save Waisaki Naholo.
Guys, we've discussed this long enough, put bluntly. We've not got any more Australian rugby to talk about. We do have other things as part of this game to talk about.
I'm so bummed. Oh, no.
And then we'll talk about a positive about the referee. Okay, a positive. Get rid of your negative knees to the rubbish. The positive was that Alamalo almost scored that try off on those ridiculous sideline slap-ins from a penalty kick. And I almost sat there and I laughed and I willed him to score that try because I would have been overly so satisfied if he had scored that try on that stupid.
That's the law that needs to change. Well, in fact, you know, I don't even know what the ruling is, tell you the truth on there.
They said it on the TV. They said if they leave from the field or they enter the field while it's getting the ball, it's okay. So pretty much you can take it wherever the hell you like.
So sit in the stand, jump up and volleyball it back into the field of play.
As long as you don't take off and land out of play, it's okay.
Yeah.
Now, what that showed was, again, was the Blues falling asleep, right?
Yep.
You had one person out on the wing. You had scrum half nearby, and all the rest of the squad huddled up going, what are we going to do at the line out? Rather than, how are we defending this penalty? And therefore, Talia was left all on his own. He did what he should do, which is keep the ball in if you can. Yep. But the rest of his teammates all left him down, let him down by not being there. Which again, as you say, Arshu, about this, Blues falling into old habits. This is we saw that there again in that situation.
And then it's biting them in the bum. Lucky that they got lucky today. It didn't.
Yep.
The
Chiefs absolutely butchered an opportunity under advantage towards the end. And then Harry Plummer did exactly the right thing. He laid all over the ball, not letting it out, underneath his post, because if that ball had come out, it would have been a try. So he did the right thing to seal it in, take the yellow card.
He's going to be offered a contract at the Crusaders next season, right? He did the absolute Crusaders thing without a shadow of a doubt. And to answer your question of why they pulled Aaron Smith, they left Brad Weber on to the very end. And the reason that that big number eight, Fijian number eight, didn't score is that pass was up here. Wasn't Weber on at the end?
Where did Aaron Smith come from?
No,
okay, what he's trying to say is that the fatigue.
The very fine points of aerobic capacity is that right at the death, when Weber passed, that big number eight had to do this. He had to take it up here, and he was coming at full speed. If he took the pass here, he was in. And that, doing this, bring it down, and they stopped him, they saved the game. And that's the reason, as brilliant as Aaron Smith is, the more I watch him, the more I think he's just incredible. But that's the reason why
they're playing. Yeah, the only reason I bring up Aaron Smith not being, you know, I get surprised when the Highlanders coach sort of like hook him, is the fact is that, but even an Aaron Smith at 75% still better than a Kane Hamilton at 100%. That's the thing.
I thought you were talking about for the All Blacks. I thought when they hooked
him. Not at All Black level. I understand at All Black level. If you got a TJ coming on or it was somebody else, then that's all good. But yeah.
You see what Aaron is saying here? Of course not, Aaron.
Yeah, it does drive you. I get Nocturnal Wright's point here that the Plummer stuff drives the gamesmanship. But there is a time where giving away a penalty is the right thing to do from a from a professional player's point of view. I think in that case, and normally you go, oh, you shouldn't be picking up yellow cards. But in that case, he did the right thing there, sealing it off. you'd normally expect one of your forwards to be making that decision because they have a better idea than someone who's I think playing fullback at the time. But yes, there was a massive defensive stand at the end there by the Blues. Josh Goodhue
he heard his team from that game. He up until that moment he had I was going to ask what happened to Josh Goodhue in that game, because he had a terrible game up until that moment.
He was on the
he came on as a replacement.
Yeah.
He was a replacement. He made three tackles.
He came on for Kali Tuioti.
Yeah.
Who was awesome.
Yeah. It's great to see him back, actually. It's taken a few games to sort of get back into it. But, before he got injured in that, I think Kali Tuioti, he compliments Paddy quite well. Mm. Paddy with that sort of real brawn, take the ball up and get involved. Even Paddy does the odd offload, but that's his game. And then you've got Kali Tuioti, who's got those nice little touches to his game, which he brings in.
He's a little bit more of an athletic sort of player, isn't he? Yep. Than Tui Pulotu was just a big
muscle
brute.
Ball.
Yeah. Whereas Kali Tuioti does bring that finesse to the game.
No, we're talking about Josh Goodhue here. Sorry.
He's gone back to Saturday night. He's gone back to
Still the Crusaders. Come on.
I'm mixing up my Goodhue here. It's like I've got two different cocktails. I've mixed them up. Sorry. It was his brother that had a terrible game, but yes.
Yes, Jack Goodhue didn't have a great game. Yes, you're quite right.
Do you think, I'll put the question out there because I don't know the answer to this, tell you the truth, but do you think the Chiefs would be happy with their performance? I mean, apart from, another loss, which obviously is hard to take, but do you think that they're actually happy with their performance tonight?
They were better.
You can't have the amount of possession and territory they had in that first half and not come away with points, right? To dominate that first half and to only have 7 points from it really is doesn't matter how good a team is defending. If you're camped that long in the opposition 22, you need to be coming away with points. So I don't think they'll be happy about that. And to give up points so quickly to the Blues, they didn't start switched on.
I'm also sort of thinking that sort of some of the coach the selections are a bit baffling. I mean, across some of the other squads as well, but I don't understand what Gatlin's trying to achieve with starting with Trask and bringing on Cruden at half time. What are you trying to achieve there? I mean, if you're looking at so Cruden's not going to be there next year, and you're trying to give Trask game time, you give him the full 80 or 60, sort of 60-70. What's the point in doing half and half? You're either trying to win the game, in which case you start with Cruden, or you're looking at the season's gone. We're going to give Trask as much game time to get into position as we can.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But, that's...
I also thought Nankerville had a poor game as well with ball in hand. I didn't think he had a great game. And also making that that Cruden call, and actually not having wing cover on the bench is a bit poor. Normally, if you do that, you've got a fullback who you can move to the wing.
Back three. Right?
But by having Quintipire there, I think that was again. I like Quintipire; he's a player that I want to see more of. But I wasn't sure he was the right person to have on the bench.
See, it's interesting you're mentioning Nankerville and the fact that he had a poor game. But I mean, he's a good player, and he's against the Highlanders, he actually didn't have a bad game. But again, it's just like, are you looking towards next year, and you're looking because you know that you're not going to win the competition? So why wouldn't you stick with the Quintipire if you're sort of thinking he's our future, and putting him in with Leonard Brown and letting them to start to get game time at that level, because it's a fantastic level of game that they're actually getting involved in, and to build that experience.
Because they don't want to play two 13s. Anton Leonard Brown is a different player at 13 to 12. He is transformed. He's been invisible. If you put a number 12 on his back, he's invisible. Those first few weeks of the competition, he might as well not been there, really. He was far below his best. He's been I think last 2 weeks he's been probably their best player after being a player that you continue to watch and go, what's he doing?
Is
he's
he
not having an impact. And now he's actually getting in there. He's defensively really, really sound. He's getting on the outsides and taking out those wingers who are cutting back in. Really good there. And I think his game at 13 complements McKenzie's attacking running game from the back because he's got confidence in guys that are outside him or sitting outside a Leonard Brown as opposed to sitting outside a Tapia. I think they have to keep him at 13. Any coach that's watched that game that probably understands, you know, what's going on, has to see the impact he's making and have to keep him there. And the flip side is for the Blues as well. Fiani, what a difference he makes in that Blues backline. Plummer, oh God. And then that bench, the Blues bench, Black and Plummer on the bench as well. And you've still got Barrett on there. It's weird. The Blues are weird. Leon McDonald, not a great player, not a great coach.
He's done the best of the coaches that we've had for a long time, so we'll have to keep him on for a bit longer.
I mean, I look at Aaron's comment there about who's playing 13 for the All Blacks. I mean, if you're going to go with it, would be Goodhue at 12 and Anton Leonard Brown at 13. It's like that would be my 12-13 from the way he played this season. Yeah, Jack Goodhue had it, like John said, an average game this week, but typically, defensively, that would be a very, very sound midfield combination, and the way Goodhue can offload in the tackle as well, keep the ball alive. Then you've got those outside backs who run onto those. I mean, it's a very dangerous combination. I mean, I don't see much else that's probably going to upset that, you know, like Braden Innall, I don't think, at that level in the centers. Yeah, Rico. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Rico's the thing with Rico is he's got to spend time in that position because, like, he hasn't played there since schoolboy rugby, and it's like it's there's a lot of responsibility in that position of what you're doing, isn't it? So you got to learn that role.
Then you can pop Lamarpe on the bench, like the comments says there, and Alex as well coming on. He could cover the well, not really the wings, but you know he does sit out there already. So it's good depth. I mean, no one's going to come from the Highlanders, are they? They don't like Tomkinson and Thompson. Why not?
Go on, John.
Oh, live long and prosper.
Neither of you would select Lamarpe.
Not starting.
No. Oh, I would depending. I'd say horses for courses for Lamalpe. I would definitely select him in a starting 15, depending on who the opposition was.
I don't think he starts any good view, and I think he's too he's too single position,
one dimensional.
He's a 12 and a 12, and that's all he is. He's a very, very good 12. Don't get me wrong, but you don't really see him playing anywhere else. Though I don't think you can play Lamalpe on the bench.
He played on the wing last week.
He's been the best. I'm trying to think of who has outperformed him in the tournament so far.
Well, Goodhue's got runs in the bank, right? From
any position, 1 to 15 in any team in the top.
Who was Lamarpe 2 weeks ago? Gone before that Blues game, he was pretty. He was Epson, just trudging along.
Yep.
Now,
yep. And now he's gone again.
I think he's been
how innocuous was that contact to his forearm, to the elbow, I think, of the Crusaders player, and he's got a broken arm out of it.
Is it
broken?
Yeah, that's what I'm pretty sure. I mean, I did hear that today. Whether it's correct or not, I don't know. I mean, it was on like a radio sort of thing. It's unusual for radio to get things wrong, isn't it?
Commercial radio, that is. There's been reports of him to have a broken arm, and there've also been reports of him having a broken wrist as well.
Right.
Ouch.
we're joking about that in the West End. It's just like, oh, I'm okay. It's just a stinger. My arm's okay.
On that note, it does sound like Sam Cane's was just a stinger, which is good news.
Yep. That's when we're talking about it.
Yep.
Is it?
What? Good news. It's good news. He's not got a bigger injury. Yes.
He doesn't want to.
We've moved on.
Playing for the All Blacks. Cornflakes.
We've moved on. Marino Makaeli Tu'u.
Aaron.
And Dylan Hunt.
Be at 12.
And Sharon Frizzell.
thank you. Someone would get the hint.
Josh Dixon. Barry Parkinson.
The only other player that challenges Lamarpe for me in this tournament so far has been Frizzell. He's the other stand-up to me.
Frizzell. But he's a six. Yeah.
Awesome. No, he's talking about Richard Mwanga has been playing very well. Aaron Smith has been playing well. I mean, there have been a number of players who have been playing very well. I don't think Lamapi has been head and shoulders above them.
No, no. As Cornflake said, it's like he basically, it was last week was where he sort of like put in an effort for the 80 minutes. And he was doing that sort of again against the Crusaders. Wasn't as dominating as against he had against the Blues, but it was still having quite a big impact until he had to go off.
Very different style of game against the Blues than against the Crusaders as well. Right, folks, thank you very much for joining me. We have overrun, as we do on a Sunday evening, because it's just so much fun arguing.
with people who are wrong.
Absolutely, we're all wrong.
Africans don't learn.
You're never wrong if you don't admit it.
Thank you, everybody, who has for joining us. It's been a great live chat this evening. Particular thank you to Alex, who put in the super chat there. So thank you for that, Alex. Do join us tomorrow evening at 8 PM for the Driving Moor Show, where we'll be talking about club rugby. We've got representatives from North Harbour clubs and also from Auckland clubs as well, and we may even have a little report in from the Waikato club competition as well. We'll also have a quick chat about the All Blacks potentially playing a Pacific 15, and we might talk about some Super Rugby as well. But we will not be talking about Super Rugby action because we've done all that tonight over the past hour and a quarter. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget, you can listen to New Zealand Sports Radio on the go as well. Just download the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all those favourite ones. Thank you, Oshrin. Thank you, John. Thank you, Cornflake.
Tired of ads interfering with your favourite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.